Coming up next, the demise of Dig and what really happened. Plus, Twitter gets a nice update, but so does Tweetbot. And Ask Gabby everything, at least everything that Facebook already knows. All that and Unpacked for Moving up next on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 68, recorded Friday, July 13th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR7. And they offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Prince Edward Island, Canada, currently on vacation with my family and just back from an interesting trip to Ottawa.
So you say interesting, and you alluded to something that happened before the show, Amber. So I'm just going to hold your feet to the fire here. And what happened?
All right. So I don't want to drag it out, but basically on Wednesday night, I flew from Prince Edward Island to Ottawa, and I had a head cold, which I wasn't terribly sick with a fever, but I had a really bad head cold. I flew in a really small plane, and when we were descending, I was just in a lot of pain, which I've felt before. Nonetheless, when we got off the plane, and this is not funny, but I couldn't hear out of my left ear, and I thought it's going to go away. You know, it's going to pop at any minute. And it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away for like 12 hours. And needless to say, 24 hours later, when I went back to the airport last night to fly home, I was on the plane and I started talking to the flight attendant saying, hey, just so you know, I'm having trouble hearing in my left ear. It's very congested and I'm just having some issues. So do you recommend anything? And she just flipped out and was like, you shouldn't be flying. You could burst your eardrum. You need to get off the plane. She got the pilot involved. He came out and, you know, lectured me on what could happen and scared me. And I ended up saying, okay, fine, I'll get off the plane. And I took a bus, which is about an 17, 18-hour bus ride. And I just got in an hour ago. And I haven't slept since Wednesday. So it was this crazy. But I knew I had to get home for 5 o'clock to do the social hour because it's 5 o'clock here in Atlantic time. And I was worried about, you know, I could have stayed in Ottawa and done it and gone to the hospital. But I know what they were going to say. They're going to say, don't fly for a couple of days until everything clears up, right? So I knew that flying was not an option. And I just needed to get home as quickly as I could. So the bus seemed like a good idea. And I don't know. It was interesting.
Did you enjoy the bus ride besides the fact that it was very long?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things where I just sit there and I can't believe that I'm in this situation. It's such a long bus ride. And the good news is that they had Wi-Fi on the bus.
Oh.
So that really kept me going for a while. However, do you ever get to that point, Sarah? And I know you just came back from a big trip. We are so tired that you know you could do something, you could be productive, but you're tired, but you can't sleep, but you can't do anything either. So I think I just sat there and stared at the window for hours and hours. So it was an adventure, let me just say. And,
wow. Well, yes. I mean, talk about taking one for the team, Amber. I cannot believe that that's what you went through, which just ended an hour ago, and you haven't slept since Wednesday. I would be in so much worse of a mood, and I would look horrible, and you look fine.
I don't know.
You're just a good traveler. But yes,
I don't know.
I know that feeling of being tired to the tired, but sort of uncomfortable. So it's not like you can just go to sleep for a while.
Yeah.
And you even have access to the internet, and you think nothing would make me happy.
Yeah.
No Facebook news feed would make me happy
nothing.
Right now. I'm just so tired. Yeah. That's real fatigue right there. That's
it is. But I know you're probably, are you over your jet lag, Sarah?
Yeah, actually I'm fine. What's interesting is, and I won't get, we don't have to get too into time changes on the show, but this was not only the first week that Amber and I are shooting the social hour on Friday afternoons, 1 p.m. my time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Atlantic time where Amber is now, but it's also the week that Tech News Today, which is the weekly show that I do with Tom Merritt, Ayaz Akhtar, and Jason Howell, moved to mornings from the afternoon. So on Monday morning, I'm on basically, well, it was London time, and then it was French time, and then it was back to London time, but I woke up early. So what normally probably would have been a weird transition for me for TNT ended up being fine. All week I'm like, hey, I'm just a morning person now. We'll see how that works next week when I want to start sleeping in again. But it has been okay. And yes, I do feel pretty good.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, it's exciting to have the time change with the show, and hopefully everybody enjoys it and can keep up with the difference in days and times. I think it's good. It's going to be good, Sarah.
I think so, too. And hopefully if either this time is not as good for you, or for whatever reason is Friday's tough, obviously you can subscribe to the show. We have both audio and video feeds, so hopefully it's not a do or die situation when we shoot the show live. But of course, we do appreciate everybody who does watch live, is in our chat room, correcting us, giving us good input while we go along. So thanks to everybody who is here live with us. Let's get into some of the social stories over the last week. Let's start with Facebook, because it's Facebook. And Facebook has been in the news quite a bit lately, but there is one change that they've made in particular that has definitely gotten people talking, and that is adding read receipts to Facebook groups. Now, what I mean by that is something that Facebook has actually had in a two-way chat already. So if Amber and I are talking on Facebook, and you know, we've got the little chat window open, and I send her something, I can see, Facebook will tell me that Amber has read my last response. So if I say something like, are you still my friend? And I see that she's read it and I don't get a response for a while. It's like, what?
You're going to worry, Sarah.
She's just sitting there thinking about her answer type thing. Now, of course, you're not always having those kinds of, those conversations on Facebook. So sometimes it can be helpful information. But when it gets into personal stuff, there's a bit of a gray area. Facebook has decided this is also something that can be helpful for Facebook groups. Now, of course, Facebook groups are private. The only people who can access a particular group are those within the group that have been invited by an administrator. So when you think of it that way, as long as a group is put together with the right intentions, the stuff that's being shared within that group probably isn't all that private. Let's say Amber and I put together a social hour group that's got me and Amber and Alex, who's running the board, and whoever's going to edit the show later on. I actually don't know, because Jeff Stewart's on vacation. And we're collaborating on who needs to do what. That would be the sort of thing where if I see a read receipt that Alex has gotten the note that I want him to pull up this one story when Amber and I are talking about it, and I see that he's read it, that could be really helpful, because he doesn't feel the need to have to say, okie dokie, and I don't feel the need to have to follow up with him. But it does take away some of that level of privacy, Amber. Does this scare you? Does it bother you?
Well, I think it's a situation where it's great for the administrator, right? Like you mentioned, it's great for the person who's organizing the group and wants to have a sense of who's reading what. However, I think from a user's perspective, it is a little bit of an invasion of privacy, and you do worry a little bit, because the reality is people are so busy these days. They get so much email, so many messages through Facebook, and now they have another thing to worry about. If they read something, they will know the person on the other end is expecting a reply. So I think in this context within Facebook groups, like you mentioned, it works okay, but I would worry if they roll it out to other parts of the Facebook platform. And I know within this TechCrunch article, they made reference to that. For example, if it could roll out to things like different posts that you put out there in terms of who's read it. I think that, you know, sometimes when people are, their privacy is exposed in terms of what they're reading and what they're doing, people just get their backs up. And I get it, you know, I think there is a reason to be a little bit concerned, but if they keep it to this, it should be okay.
I agree. I don't have a problem with groups. And it's like, if you did have a problem with people in a group knowing when you've read an update, just don't be part of that group. I mean, it doesn't really change your Facebook experience too much. It would be a totally different story if this became something that was part of the news feed, where I was afraid to look at my news feed because someone would see that I saw the picture of their new baby and I didn't like it, or something like that. But I don't see Facebook doing this, because they know human behavior well enough to know that if we don't have at least an element of lurking to the experience, then we just don't have fun anymore. I remember there was I know you can't do this with Facebook, as, you know, find out who's been looking at your photos and stuff, but there was a time on MySpace where there was some sort of a hack that did allow people to figure out who had looked at their profile or something. And I think that was right around the time where I was like, you know what? I don't even like MySpace anyway, and this is just a good time for me to delete my account. I just don't like this anymore. So obviously Facebook doesn't want people doing that with them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I use FreshBooks a lot, and I know we've talked about it on the show. I think they've been a sponsor on the show before for all of my invoicing. And anytime I send an invoice through FreshBooks and I send it to a client and they read it, I see a notification within my stream that that person has viewed that invoice. I had a funny situation recently with a client who said they never received my invoice, but I knew that a month ago they had actually viewed it. And it just creates these uncomfortable situations sometimes, right, where you get into these awkward conversations and you don't want to say, well, I know you viewed it, but it can create some stigma around the relationship for sure. As I said, a benefit to people like if someone's an administrator or someone like me wants to know if someone's viewed my invoice, but it can create awkward social situations.
Definitely. Well, we trust Facebook to do the right thing because they never upset their users. So there's nothing to worry about. I don't actually think there is in this case, but we'll keep an eye on them. Moving on to some news from Twitter. There was a big Twitter for iPhone update, actually. Amber, I don't know if you've experienced some of the enhancements to the Twitter app. Sometimes I just forget my words. But one of the things that I actually decided I really liked, which is so Twitter for iPhone, and this is just for the iPhone version of Twitter. This doesn't apply to the iPad version, and it's different than, of course, the web version or the Twitter for OS X version. But the Twitter for iPhone has been enhanced with a lot of features that people who already use Tweetbot will say Tweetbot has had for a really long time, and that's true. But if you're not a Tweetbot user, or for whatever reason you really like the native Twitter client, you might like some of these. For example, the other day I had written a tweet that was, I don't even remember what the tweet was about. It was something about being in a cafe, and I saw my boyfriend at the same cafe, and we both didn't know that the other person was there. And then I got a push notification that another third friend of mine had favorited that tweet. And I went, oh, that's kind of cool, because that, with the new version of Twitter for iPhone, is turned on by default, because that's not something that I turned on. I thought, that's actually kind of fun. It's nice to know which one of my friends thought that my tweet was funny or helpful, or they're at least bookmarking it type of a thing. I actually tweeted that I liked the feature, and then a bunch of people tweeted back at me, Tweetbot's been doing that for a long time. And so I went into my Tweetbot settings and realized, oh yeah, that actually is something that Tweetbot can do. But I had never had it turned on, so I didn't even know that I wanted the feature until it was kind of given to me. But that's not the only feature. They've made enhancements to auto-completing. If Amber's searching for somebody that she thinks she knows their Twitter handle or maybe their real name, and Twitter for iPhone will attempt to make better indications of who she's trying to reach to help jog her memory, that sort of thing. Have you played around with it much, Amber? I know you're more of an Android girl these days.
Yeah, it's funny. I just downloaded a new Android app. I forget the name of it, but for Twitter, and I'm not a huge fan of it, but I am trying to use Android more and more. So I'm excited. I also have an iPhone. Excited to hear more about this app. And also, I would task anyone who is listening out there, if they have an idea of an Android app for Twitter that they love, I'm looking for a really good one. But so far, the one I'm using is just so-so.
It's good. It's good. I actually am a Tweetbot person. And the reason that I like Tweetbot is not only because I think that they have richer features, such as muting a user for either, well, you can mute a user permanently, but I never really want to do that because why would I even be following them? But you can mute a user for a short period of time. Maybe they're at a conference and it just doesn't apply to you, or you're trying to cut down on noise. That's just one of the many features that Tweetbot does offer. They are a third-party client, though. So, and Twitter has made some changes recently. Some of you are familiar with them, where they've cut off access to LinkedIn was a story that I read about while I was actually on vacation, which caused a lot of people to say, if Twitter just sort of suddenly doesn't want to work with a company via their API, could they cut off access to all companies who technically aren't part of Twitter that are using their APIs? That's sort of another conversation. But it is a good phone update, and it did let me know that there are certain features that I actually like and I wanted without knowing it. But since we mentioned Tweetbot came up with its own update. Tweetbot is available on, well, for iPhone users. For me, I have it running on the iPhone. I have it running on my iPad. And what's neat is that I sync them both via iCloud so that when I am halfway through my feed, let's say on iPhone, I got to go away and do something else, I can pick up where I left off on my iPad rather than just starting at the top of my feed and then trying to figure out where I had stopped earlier in the day. Very helpful to me. Tweetbot for Mac is now out. I am running it. It's actually just in alpha. So I've got it on my computer, and it looks... Sorry for also showing you my... Let's see if we can clean this up a little bit. Yeah, that's good enough, huh? And you can see a little bit of chat. It looks a lot like Tweetbot for iPhone, really, but it's not perfect. I do notice some bugs. When I'm trying to find a conversation, I can see that Frank here looks like he's replying to something that Amber and I said. Usually a double click will open up that conversation. I have to double click twice. So that's something that's it's just part of an alpha product. They haven't figured that out specifically. And the folks behind Tweetbot have said, listen, what we want people to do is download this and be really diligent about bug reporting to help us make a better product more quickly, because obviously strength in numbers. But this makes me happy. The iCloud part of it, which I mentioned, which is really nice for syncing, does not yet apply to Tweetbot for Mac because you can't actually have that integration until you're legitimately in the App Store, and they can't be in the App Store until they've been approved by Apple. So that's something that you could use, Amber, at least, on your Mac.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure I'll end up giving that a try. I still, you know, it's funny. I still end up defaulting to using Hootsuite all the time just as a social dashboard. And I think not because I cross-post a lot, but I do once in a while. And I just love having that functionality there. But I'm always in for trying out new things, as you know, Sarah. So I'm sure I'll give it a whirl. And again, with the Twitter app for Android, if anyone knows a good one I should try out, I'd love to give it a test. Now, Sarah, we talked a little bit about Dig over the past few weeks on the show in terms of, I guess we can say, the demise of Dig now, the different assets being broken up and the overall company being acquired. There was a headline floating around yesterday that Dig had been acquired for $500,000. Now, as we kind of talked about before the show, this is a little bit misleading or maybe even a lot misleading, because the truth is there are different elements of the company that have been broken up and sold. And in fact, according to the TechCrunch article, LinkedIn also is one of the purchasers of Dig. In fact, they bought some things like patents that Dig had. And they also talk about how the team was sold to the Washington Post for about $12 million. Looks like LinkedIn paid $3.75 million for some of those patents. And also BetaWorks was one of the people who also acquired elements of Dig. So it's almost as though the company was kind of broken up and then sold overall for a total of $16 million, according to this TechCrunch story, and pieces sort of splattered everywhere. So I don't know. You know, it's kind of sad. I mean, Dig was so big at one point to see it disappear.
Sold for parts. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you that, number one, so many of the headlines, which felt a little sort of, you know, I kind of felt that there was like a little like Dr. Evil stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because people just love to be able to say, look how far they've fallen type of a thing. And some of it was in really poor taste. That's obviously not what we're going to do here. But it's not just someone being happy that maybe a social network has fallen, because that makes for a good story, you know. But it's not really accurate to say that, ooh, Dig was once in talks with Google to be acquired for $200 million and they only sold for $500,000. That's just one piece. When you look at the story, sure, Dig lost a lot of value. That's clear. They lost a lot of users. They're not the social networking giant that they were a few years ago. All of that is true, but we do want to be as clear with the numbers as we can. And yeah, it sounds like, quite honestly, if... several different companies. So we've got Social Code, which is a subsidiary of the Washington Post. They bought about 15 engineers last month, 2 months ago. And then we've got LinkedIn, who's like, well, Dig's got some great patents, particularly a patent to click a button to vote up a story. That's a good patent.
That's a great one for them.
And sure. then BetaWorks says, well, you've got your domain. There's some code that we're interested. User data, traffic. They still have quite a bit of monthly traffic. It doesn't really, I don't think it's better or worse so much to be acquired specifically towards one company rather than being sold off to companies that need part of you but not all of you. I guess if you're an investor or an employee, then, you know, you would perhaps get less equity in the company because everything's sort of split up. So, yeah, it's not a cut and dry situation, but
yeah.
I don't feel like people have been a little unfair.
I think so, too. And I think it's not a neat and tidy story about the company getting acquired, right? It's not as though you can kind of tie it up with a nice little bow and say it was acquired for a bunch of money. Great job to everybody who worked at Digg. I think we slowly saw Digg kind of falling over the course of the past year, 2 years. And, I think this is kind of the way things are going to go in the social networking world, though, Sarah. A friend of mine compared it recently to the fashion world. Things go in and out of style all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. We've seen companies that have entirely folded in 6 months on the show that we've talked about. So it's not, I don't know if we're going to have social networks that are going to have a nice 10-year-long history and a great shiny story at the end of it.
Exactly. And Digg has been a company for close to 10 years. I don't, more like eight, but it's like, that is a long time as far as social networking goes. We've got stuff that rises, and then people find the next big thing. Tom and I argue all the time. I'm pointing this way because I'm pointing at his desk. whether Facebook is going to be around in another 10 years. Tom says maybe not, because Facebook's just like MySpace, which was just like Friendster. Obviously, everybody has evolved, but it's the same idea where it's a really good tool for a while, and then somebody uses that tool to make something better. And then you've got the whole fad aspect and momentum, and people want new and different things. So I think that that's a part of Digg's demise as well, is that it just had some competition and it couldn't retain the users that it had once upon a time when it seemed very, very unique.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think I agree with Tom on this one. I think in 10 years, it'll be tough to imagine a world where Facebook exists as it exists today. I don't know if that means that someone is going to buy up the parts of Facebook, but that would be interesting, like the poke and all of these other features that have had their moments in social media history. But I think it'll be a tough run for them the next few years.
Yes, agreed. It's worth noting that BetaWorks says, we're going to keep working with Digg. It's not as if we're just taking that domain and having it being absorbed into the properties that we already own. News.me is one of them, by the way, something that we've talked about at length on iPad today, because they have a pretty good app. And you can learn more at news.me. But they do say, listen, Digg is not dead. We can figure out a way to make it kind of a sleeker, leaner news machine. So Amber and I will definitely keep our eyes out for how Digg does change and if it might be resurrected as something totally different but still totally cool. Quick reminder that we have changed the date and time of the Social Hour Live tapings to Fridays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, or if you're on Atlantic time, which I have learned Amber is, and so is everyone else on Prince Edward Island, and even people in parts of Maine, 5 p.m. And thanks to everybody who watches the show live every week. We love having you guys. Wanted to remind you, though, that if you go to twit.tv/TSH, that is not only our show archive, where all of our past shows live, where you can find out, what did they talk about in episode 67? There was that one website that Amber showed off, and it seemed really cool, but what was that? All of our old episodes, plus show notes, plus links to tips and tricks, story items, new websites that we've found, apps, all of that stuff is located in each episode page. So you don't have to worry too much about anything that you might have missed. You can always go back and catch up. And that's also where you'll find our subscription links. So if you want to subscribe to the video feed, because Friday afternoons don't work for you to be here live, not a problem. We're happy to have you pretty much any way that you want to join us on the show. Audio feeds, too, for those of you who are, you like to jog and you can't figure out a way to watch the show and jog at the same time, because that would be dangerous. That's cool, too. And we also have our fans who send us videos every once in a while that show them driving and watching the show, which is a terrible idea. Please don't do that. We want you to watch the show, but just not while you're driving. Be safe out there. All right, Amber, before we get to some more news from the Social Hour, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. Squarespace is, it's funny, I was just in the innards of Squarespace last night because somebody had written me and said, your Facebook links don't work. Did you know that? And I went, no, why not? It's because I was still pointing to a Facebook page that I've now made invisible to people. Anyway, it was an outdated link, and I went in and I changed it, and two shakes of a lamb's tail, it was super easy. And I hadn't been in there in a while to fuss around with code, and it was like riding a bike, you remember right away. If you're not familiar with Squarespace at all and you don't know what I'm talking about, Squarespace.com is the fastest, easiest way to create a really high-quality website or blog. I happen to use it as a blog, but I don't really write all that much, to be honest. What it's kind of become, my website, is more of a all-in-one hub for all things that I do. You can get links to everything that I do here at Twit. You can get my updated Facebook links, where I'm hanging out on Twitter, Flickr pictures, that sort of thing. That's how I've chosen to use my Squarespace page, but you could certainly use it as more of a long-form diary. You could use it as a place to display your photos. You can set up forums, a store. The list is endless, really. I see a lot of some of our, I guess, competitors, you would say, people who are in the video podcast space, use Squarespace pages as a really nice showcase of all of their latest episodes with show notes. What we do at Twit. Go ahead, Amber.
I'm thinking of maybe Clayton Morris offhand, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. uses it on a regular basis, and it makes for such a slick looking site that doesn't require a lot of maintenance, which is why it's so great for someone who doesn't have a lot of time or want to spend a lot of time tinkering too much.
Exactly, and if you want to set up forums so that people can talk about things that you've talked about on your show or whatever, that's really easy too. So Squarespace really has it dialed in. They understand that people want to create websites for a variety of reasons, not just blogs, and sometimes all those other guys just don't offer everything that Squarespace offers. They also have free domain registration for annual plan customer subscriptions. This can be really, really helpful. So domain selection and domain mapping is completely integrated within your sign-up process. So you can set up a site easier than ever. You can save money. And if you ever decide to cancel the service, if you ever like, you know, I've moved on in my life, your domain is yours to keep. So Squarespace isn't going to say, no, we're going to take that back now. So that's a really nice perk that they've added to their annual plans as well. They've got iPhone, iPad, Android apps for updating your site on the go. I use mine all the time if I want to just make sure that there isn't some sort of a weird comment that I don't want there, etc. Google's complete web font library, now fully integrated, over 300 fonts. And they're very, very, like I said, they're very, very good integrated with social. So, hey, maybe you're not a prolific writer. I don't find that I am anymore. But I am prolific social networker, and I want that to be reflected when somebody goes to saralane.com. Squarespace is a great solution for anyone. And we've got an offer code for all of the viewers and listeners of the Social Hour. If you go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SocialHour7, and you sign up for a free account, by the way, it doesn't cost a thing. You don't need a credit card or anything just to try it out. Go ahead and try out Squarespace. Start building your website. Use that offer code SocialHour7, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. And don't forget about that free domain registration if you decide to purchase an annual plan. Really comes in handy. Thanks, Squarespace.
All right.
We love you. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, so Lady Gaga's social network Little Monsters is now available to anyone who wants to sign up. You can sign up on their login page using Twitter or Facebook, the idea being to bring all of her fans, who I believe she calls monsters, together in one social place. Sarah, I don't know about you, but I think this is interesting. I think we're going to see more and more of this, where individuals end up building their own social networks and trying to control the message and the platform that way, so they don't necessarily have to depend on people coming to Facebook. So I think this is a trend that will continue throughout this year and beyond. And of course, Lady Gaga has done so well in the social media world. It's a natural thing for her to kind of be leading the way.
I kind of love this. So I went ahead and registered for Little Monsters, Amber. I'm not ashamed. And I'm looking at my profile right now. Now, there is a lot of Lady Gaga in here. And I would say I am a casual Lady Gaga fan, not the biggest one. So a lot of this doesn't really apply to me. But the site, or the network rather, is designed to, I think if she does this right, and her people, of course, they could do it really smartly, because right now Lady Gaga's a really big pop star. She might not be a huge pop star, oh, I don't know, in 5 to 10 years. But maybe if the site gradually moves towards, oh, I don't know, a love for kooky fashion, and yeah, there are a lot of people who can connect with each other based on similar interests that start with Lady Gaga but then turn into something else, this might actually have legs. It's also called Little Monsters, which I know is a Lady Gaga term, but it's not like her name is in the network.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I think it's probably not for me, but if I was a huge fan of hers, that would be at least a...
You would love it, right?
Yeah, and at least a first start to see who else is in here that's a super fan that also might really like this certain kind of artwork that I also like.
Yeah, and it's well laid out. You know, I know in the article that you just showed, there was a mention that it looked a little bit like Pinterest, and that was mm-hmm. the first thing I saw... thought about when I saw it too. It's very well designed and really easy to browse through it. Now, Sarah, I'm just curious, although this is kind of going off on a bit of a tangent, but is there one person out there, if they created a social network, where you would follow and you would join and be an active participant? Who would
if
that person
Johnny
be?
Johnny Depp started a social network.
I knew it.
I would be his biggest signer-inner. That's right. Not a problem. He'll never do it, though. I'm sure he doesn't have a Facebook account, and he's too cool. He probably doesn't even have a computer.
You should have visited him in Paris, though, or sorry, the south of France.
Wouldn't
which is
that
like,
have been nice? If I had known where to find him, I would have.
I bet
would
you
have
would.
Found him. Luckily for him, I don't have that kind of information. But but yes, no. To answer your question, honestly, Amber, probably not.
Yeah.
But I just watched There's a documentary on HBO. You know Chris Crocker, right? The Leave Britney Alone guy?
Yeah.
Who's obviously a YouTube famous person. There's a Chris Crocker documentary called My Life at the Zoo, I think it's called. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I watched it over the weekend thinking, it's about kind of YouTube and memes, and I'll give it a shot. And I really liked it. I thought it was interesting. He's a fascinating character, but it's not just about him. It's just about the idea of making videos that nobody sees, and sort of one day something clicks, people start sharing something that you've put on YouTube or MySpace or wherever, and you kind of become a celebrity, and how that can change your behavior and influence how you're sharing with people going forward. The reason I bring him up is because he's not so much a Lady Gaga fan as a Britney Spears fan, but it was something that, I mean, he loves Britney Spears, or did, at least at the time that the documentary was made. And there are other people that he would love to connect with, I'm sure, on a social network like Little Monsters.
Yeah, I think it has a certain audience, right? I think I'm kind of like you, and I don't know how much time I would spend on a social network like that if it was just about one person, but I think there is definitely a place for that out there for artists who are looking to really bring their fans into one destination, and we're going to see more of that. And they will, fall by the wayside as well and die off too, but there'll be a few winners, hopefully.
Absolutely. All right, moving on. Another story. This is going to be really good news for anybody who lives in New York City or is visiting New York City anytime soon. Payphones there are going to become mobile hotspots, some of them anyway. This is a company called Titan, at least is one of the companies that's participating. So the deal is we all kind of see those payphones on the side of the street. There aren't really that many anymore, but particularly in New York City, I mean, there are quite a few of them. And in fact, the last time I was in Manhattan, I took a picture of this really sad payphone. There was like a bottle of liquor on the top of it and some chewing gum. And it was like halfway torn apart. And I thought, gosh, this is a place where back in the day I would have used a quarter and called somebody and hung out here
Magic.
For a while. Yeah. But the idea is make these payphones mobile hotspots so that when people want to be online, sharing photos and videos and being social with each other, there are just more places to do that within the city. Love this idea. I don't think that they just have to rely on payphones, but why not? You've got this thing, it's sitting here. Why not actually make it something useful?
I think it's a great idea. I think I walk by payphones, like you just mentioned, Sarah, all the time. And I think it's kind of sad. I wonder what's going to happen to all of these old payphones that are spread out throughout cities around the world. And to see them turn into something like this, or at least have some sort of purpose, I think is a great idea. Because in many cases, I think they're almost like, I know people still use them to some extent, I'm sure. But otherwise, they're almost like relics, and they just sit there and collect dust.
Yes.
Smog.
Exactly. So in the case of New York. Good on ya. New York payphones. You will not die. You will only evolve. We got a social tip, Amber. This is something that you found, and I'm sort of surprised that I hadn't heard about it before because it's such a
yes.
cool iOS app.
Yes. Yes. I told you before, it's all about pleasing the person on the other end, Sarah, with something new and surprising. Yes, this is called Gabby. It was released a couple of weeks ago, and I really fell in love with it. It's an iPhone app that allows you, an iOS app that allows you to view your Facebook information in a different and more interesting way. So the idea being, once you log into the app, you're able to see things, statistics about your information on Facebook, like how many people have viewed a photo, the most popular photo that you have posted online, things that are getting the most comments. And you're even able to get really granular within Gabby. So for instance, if you wanted to dig down into information within your Facebook network, like I want to find all my single guy friends who are Capricorns, you would be able to do that within the Gabby app. So you build upon all of these different search functionalities, and you're able to get information in just a really different and visually interesting way.
I went ahead and downloaded this, and we are looking at this on my iPad just because it's kind of nicer to shoot. But it is an iPhone app, as you can see. It's not native for the iPad. But like Amber said, and this is something that I obviously had to connect to my Facebook account because that's where all of the data is coming from. But this is what it's suggesting to me. Who of my friends shares my musical taste? Maybe I don't care about that, but I can change parts of the sentence to say, who of my friends shares my cinematic taste? Now, see, that's not really good for me because I don't actually put a lot of that information in Facebook. You know, sometimes people list all the movies that they love. Who of my friends is talking about my pictures the most, my videos? How about my videos? I shared a video from iPad today earlier on Facebook. I'd kind of like to know that. Who's talking about some of the stuff that I share regularly on Facebook? Now, I had done a few zero results. Hey, why isn't anybody talking about my Facebook? I guess it's because maybe they count that as sharing something that I had originally posted. But a search that I had done before the show started is, who likes my links the most? That was mm-hmm. interesting to me. Ethan Barber, I know you watch iPad Today. I don't know if you're watching Social Hour Live, but you like my links the most. And for that, I cannot thank you enough. You are a super fan, a true fan, followed by Glenn Collins, and the list goes on. So that was kind of interesting to me. Or, Amber, I actually searched for one of the exact things that you had mentioned as an example. What pictures of mine that I've shared on Facebook are the most popular? And by far,
I did that too.
I know my audience. It's that picture I posted of my old MacBook Air next to the new, brand new Retina MacBook Pro, which at the time wasn't actually available to anybody. So people really liked that one, or at least they were interested in it, followed by a weird picture. It was my profile picture, so there was a lot of time for people to like it. But that's Gabby. And as you mentioned, I can go ahead and then search for people with a certain astrological signs, obviously based on the birthday, if they've entered their birthday, who are my Aries guy friends, because, you know, they're really fiery and I want to make sure I stay away from them once I'm single again. Just kidding. But I'll go ahead and say new, my friend Addison, my friend Brett, my friend Dan Luters. Hey, happy birthday in April, Dan, and so on. So this is kind of like information that is available to you on Facebook already, but would not be easy to search in the way that Gabby puts everything together.
Yeah, I love it.
It's really fun. It's a dollar.
It's really fun. And it's a new app, and they've talked about they're going to come out with new features and functionality as well. And it's just fun, like you mentioned, to dive around and dig up different things. One of the searches I did was to find out who shares the most friends in common with me. And that was kind of funny because I believe, if I'm right, it was like Callie Lewis, you, Sarah, Veronica. And the list went on and on. So it definitely nailed that one. But it's just fun to explore and be able to to look at information that's your own and see it in just such a stunning way that they've done within the app. So a big fan of that one. Now, Sarah, for our spotlight, you have an app. I believe it's an app that I have not heard of, but I'm sure this could come in handy for a lot of people who are moving.
Yeah, this is actually... I'm sure they have a mobile site, but this is something that I discovered on the web. It's called Unpacked, and that's UNPAKT.com. The idea is that if you are moving, nobody likes moving. So moving is already extremely stressful. You don't want to do it. It's going to be expensive, but you might save, depending on how far your move is and where you're going and from what city to what city, et cetera. You might save some money if you do your homework. What I tend to do is wait to the last minute, get really frustrated, and probably overpay to have somebody move me. The last time I moved, actually, I tried not to pay anybody because I wanted to save money. And by the end of the weekend, I was bruised and battered and in tears and said, never again will I do this. I will never do this again. So Unpacked is a way to be able to list in great detail everything that you have to move. And when I say great detail, it's like, what size is your TV? Is it wall mounted? Do you need somebody to come into your home and take it off the wall? Or are you going to do that on your own? That sort of stuff. So it does get very granular. And we'll attempt to not only give you an estimate of what you should expect to pay, but who your moving companies are. What do you have to choose from? It's almost like a kayak or a hipmunk for airline tickets, but for moving companies. Now, I should say right off the bat that at this time, because they're very new, this is only for people moving from New York City to somewhere else. So the somewhere else cities are very long. I have put in a very hypothetical move. I do not live in New York City right now, but I told Unpacked, I live in New York City and I want to move to San Francisco. That's a 3,000-mile move. That's really far. And I've gone through and given it a pretty good indication of all the things that I own, how big my house is. It's saying you got to move almost 3,000 miles. Your general price is about $5,000, which is, it sounds so, so expensive. Hey. But again, that's a big move. And I've got a lot of stuff. I've got got two people's worth of apartments in one apartment now, but this is actually a really, really good exercise. Even if you're just wanting to go through all of the inventory that you may or may not, even stuff that you hadn't thought of, like, I forgot about my living room rug. My living room rug is 9 feet long. I mean, it's kind of heavy, and that's something that has to be accounted for, too. And Unpacked reminded me in the miscellaneous section that, I've got that rug. Can't forget the rug, even though I don't really feel like I look at it all the time. So this is a really cool service. I think that if you are trying to flee Manhattan or the New York City area, then this is already awesome for you, but it just does give you a sense of what companies are trying to do with something that maybe doesn't need to be disrupted as an industry so much, but can really help you down the road as they expand to other places.
Yeah, it's so stressful, right? So anything that can kind of alleviate some of that stress, I think, would be a welcome addition to the moving process, because I've done it many times as well, and it's never fun. So it seems like a really cool tool.
Yeah, so that's Unpacked, UNPAKT.com. Found that originally on All Things D, so thanks to them. The Social Hour is a social show, so we might as well read a few of your emails. We've got a couple of emails this week. The first one comes from Trevor Ludham, who says, I caught episode 66. We are now in 68, so it was a couple episodes ago, and you were talking about the Twitter advertising during NASCAR, and you both seemed a little puzzled as to why they chose NASCAR specifically. Here's a little backstory for you. Back in February, during the Daytona 500, there was a big crash, caused the race to stop for nearly an hour. They were cleaning up the track, they were repairing things, and it took so long that drivers got out of their cars, they just kind of hung out, they were chatting, and Brad Keselowski, I know that I'm butchering his name, NASCAR people, please forgive me. He's a big Twitter user. He was a driver, used that opportunity to tweet directly from his car. It was a lot of fun for his followers. They were following along, getting an idea of what was happening from his perspective. And during that time, he gained 100,000 new followers. So might be also important to note that the NASCAR organization had no problem with him keeping his phone on, keeping it inside his car. It was totally fine for him to tweet from the car. In fact, I believe both NASCAR and Twitter saw this as excellent publicity. I think you're probably right, Trevor. That is, I didn't know that story. Amber, did you?
I had no idea, although I guess it doesn't seem like a big surprise. It makes sense that some of the drivers may do that. And just to, you know, opening us up to a whole new world, Sarah, because like I mentioned before, I don't know a lot about NASCAR. I've spent a decent amount of time in Daytona, funny enough. Haven't had a chance to see any races. But very cool that I think NASCAR really endorses usage of social media, because sometimes you get organizations that are so fearful that they sometimes limit people who are participating in their organization to how they actually engage. So good on them for actually using the tools and helping other people and approving other people's usage too.
Absolutely. I guess it sort of has to do with whether you're part of a team or, and NASCAR seems like it's more of an individual type of a thing, and you would be represented by your own management rather than a national football organization, let's say. But yeah, it does seem cool that they can be so transparent with their fans, and people love that sort of thing.
They're not limiting it, because even if they're individuals coming into the NASCAR environment, right? Sometimes there are situations, we've seen this, I think even at the Olympics, that if there are athletes coming in, that perhaps they are limited as far as how much they can use social media, just because of the space that they're in is regulated by someone else, right? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You have to learn more about this for sure.
Got another email from Gunter, I think your name is. He lives in Austria. So he says, sorry for my simple English. Sorry, Gunter, for me also butchering your name. Got a lot of curveballs on the show today. He says, I'm watching different shows. I'm not sure if I'm choosing the right show for the following question. So he's talking about Twitch shows. We'll take it. Will Siri change the way that we talk? Of course, I include all other voice recognition systems, Siri and those that you can run on Android, etc. But we're learning to talk in a way so that Siri can understand us. If the effect is so strong, will that change the way that we talk human to human too? Now, at first, I thought to myself, well, Siri isn't very social. It's more of a personal question, answer, get information type of a thing. But I think he might be on to something, Amber, because the other day I was thinking this as I was just waiting for my car to get fixed. It was actually yesterday. And I had to wait for a couple of hours, so I took my iPad to a nearby cafe. It was a beer cafe, but that's neither here nor there. And I got my iPad out, and I'm like, going to answer some emails. And because I didn't have an external keyboard with me or anything, it's like I'm very big on brevity when it comes to the iPad, because it's not so fun to type at long periods. And I thought to myself, you know, I really am almost a different personality, because I'm not trying to speak like a cave person. I'm just trying to write as little as possible while still getting my point across. And that certainly doesn't only apply to the iPad. I think we can all think of instances where it's like you're typing on something that's small and you don't want to be doing it for very long, and so your behavior changes. And I wonder if that will actually start spilling out into the way that I interact with people, just because I'm so used to it. And I don't know if that's too much of a stretch.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's funny, because I've used Siri enough, but I don't really use Siri on a regular basis as far as that type of interaction. I think as far as voice recognition tools, I think it's going to take people a long time to get used to even using them and understanding the language that's involved in using them. It's all of a sudden, you know, for the past couple of decades, we've become so proficient as far as typing out our thoughts, then asking us to switch to using voice, I think is an adjustment that's going to take some time. However, I think once we get there, it's going to be very exciting, but I still think it's going to be a while.
I do too. I did find Siri helpful here and there when I was in my travels. There was a city in France we went to, Bordeaux, and we were like, Bordeaux is awesome. Why haven't we come here before? This is a great city. And we thought, how many people live here anyway? And so those are the sorts of things where Siri really comes in handy, because it's stuff you could find on Wikipedia, but it's sort of fun to ask and get that sentence structure perfect, so that she's like, aha, yes, I know what you mean. and those of you who use voice recognition systems that are not Siri, I know that you have similar ways to do that sort of thing. But yeah, it's I'm probably not going to mistake Amber for Siri and ask her certain questions about the population of French cities anytime soon. But you never know. Can we give us another
year? You never know. Yeah, you never know what will happen. All right, Sarah. So instead of our tweet of the week, because I like to switch it up here, sometimes we have Pinterest clones, sometimes we have tweets. This week we have the Twitter parody account of the week. And in fact, there are 50 of these accounts that I wanted to mention. Found this on shinyshiny.tv. And it is the top 50 Shades of Gray Twitter parodies. Now, we've talked about Shades of Gray before on the show in terms of being a really popular book. And I had no idea there were so many Twitter parody accounts. One of my favorites that they list here is the 50 Sheds of Gray. And this one gets kind of fun, a little dicey here and there. But a lot of people using coming up with some creative ideas as far as creating parody accounts that kind of correspond to the popularity of the book.
I want to know. I understand that people like titillating material and there's like a tee-hee aspect of all of this. But I want to know what it is about the 50 Shades of Gray franchise that has everybody in such a frenzy. I now even have friends of mine who they're not even really laughing about it anymore. They're like, oh, yeah, I read 50 Shades of Gray at the pool last weekend. And I'm like, why are you telling me? It's like, aren't you supposed to be embarrassed? It's like it's become this thing that is almost like a compulsory. I don't know. I don't get it, Amber. I haven't read it, so maybe it is the best book in the world.
I'm just missing out. But I don't really read a lot of fiction, so I'm not sure. And it is fiction, right?
Yes.
I think so,
yes,
unless someone's getting very personal with their experiences. But I haven't read it. I have no real interest in reading it, to be honest with you. But I'm hearing more and more about it. It's just constant. And I guess not a big surprise that the conversation has trickled into the Twitter environment. But Sarah, it seems like one of those things that unless we read it, we're not going to really understand. So maybe we're going to have to read some of it.
That's true.
Not on the
like,
show out loud.
It was like how we had to finally just join Pinterest so we could figure out why it was
we're
so great.
We're stubborn over here. What is everybody talking about?
We're social, but we're also stubborn. It's true.
Yeah, socially stubborn.
So I guess we just both said that we'd read 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know. I'll listen to it on Audible. That shouldn't be weird. Alone in my car, driving to work in the morning with my coffee. Woo. That's probably actually the best way to do it because nobody will be around to watch me blush. But we want to hear from you guys. I want to make sure before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad that you have all the information you need to get a hold of us. We make it really easy. If you want to write us, it's thesocialhour@twit.tv. Thanks to everybody who wrote over the last few weeks. If you watch the live show, you know that Amber and I haven't actually done a live show in a few weeks because we were both on vacation. If you watch every week, then we had new episodes for you. So hopefully you almost didn't even notice. But we got a mountain of email over the last couple of weeks. And we can't get to all of it in every episode. But please do keep it coming because we love featuring as many of you as possible. Leave us a voicemail. 2626-SOCIAL is our Google Voice inbox. So just type 2626-SOCIAL. The numbers that correspond to that. Leave us a voicemail. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less. You can always record a video, upload it somewhere, and send it to us. Upload it to YouTube or Vimeo. I always use those two as examples because they're the two biggest ones, at least that I use. But you can really upload a video anywhere as long as you send us the link. Just don't send us an attachment. All right, Amber, we haven't done Rad or Fad in a while, and I, for one, cannot wait.
All right. Okay. So just before we get to it, I just want to say a little bit of a thank you since you just talked about people participating in the show to Real Paul. He's just said on Twitter that he likes the time change of the show. So that's really encouraging. Woo-hoo. Love to hear that. 747 Russ, who sent me a tweet saying that I should use TweetDeck for Android, and also from Jeff, who says I should try TweetCaster Pro from One Ladder Apps also for Android. So thank you so much for interacting during the show. That's always fun, too. So we'll keep that up. Now, Sarah. You are not married, right? Did you get married in France?
No, I am not a married woman.
Okay, I am not married either, although I have a significant other. And it's almost like I'm married. However, I have not taken the plunge on Facebook and shared anything about being engaged or married because it has not happened. But now if you plan to do that, Facebook has decided to give you more exposure on their platform. So just like you would see when it's someone's birthday in the top right-hand corner on Facebook within the little updates, you would also be able to see wedding announcements, engagement announcements, and the information will stay up there longer as well. So I think about 2 days as far as trying to get as many people as possible, give them the opportunity to see this. Now, my first reaction when I saw this was, wow, I feel bad for the people who aren't married who are going to see this all the time. I don't know if that's justified.
Especially if you're friends with your exes and you secretly just don't want it to work out or something. It's like, it's there for longer just to toy with your emotions.
So I'm wondering, well, you know, maybe Sarah and I are the wrong people to ask, because I don't even know if I would get excited about changing my status, but I don't know. So I don't know if it's rad or fad. I feel like it's a little bit of a fad as far as, it's just not as exciting of a development, but like I said, maybe I'm just not the married type, Sarah. I don't know.
Ray Zorback in chat says, it's just one more reason to unfriend people who aren't really friends. You are probably right. That's actually probably the solution to all of this gray area stuff is, if there was somebody who got engaged and for some reason you feel anything other than bliss and happiness for the couple, maybe you shouldn't be Facebook friends. But we all know that that would just be too easy. I think I agree with you almost about the fad part of all of this, and it's almost not even limited to Facebook. There's a lot of look at my happiness that happens online.
Yes.
And happens in a social sense, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that people shouldn't be happy, but I do think that there's a little bit of a feeling like you have to share about that sort of thing just because you have the tools available to you. I actually don't even have my relationship status on Facebook. It's not really something that I've even thought about all that much, but I also haven't filled in the necessary information, and I don't feel the need to. And when people get engaged, I'll like it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what they want me to do. So it doesn't really bother me, but I don't think that it's a better... Like, as life moments go, it's awesome for those people, but it's not necessarily something that I need to see more of.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting, too, if you look at Facebook and think about Facebook as choosing and deciding that this one occasion was, you know, perhaps one of the most important. And yet what I'm seeing among my friends, and maybe this is just an age thing, but more and more of my friends are just not getting married at all. They're having kids, they're buying houses, and, you know, marriage just isn't part of the equation. So maybe I just don't put enough value in that. If I were 25, maybe, I'm not 25, clearly. But if I were 25...
You look 25. What are you saying?
I might have been more excited. You know, I might think this was kind of rad and really exciting, but... Sarah and I are just washed up, I guess.
We are. We're like, yeah, we have significant others. What do you want from us?
Whatever. I've been engaged before. It didn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we both agree. Marriage is a fad, and, you know, it's a passing one at that. No, I'm just kidding.
It's not for us. Neither is 50 Shades of Grey. We just want to hang out on our computer, Sarah.
Exactly.
Look at apps.
It's simple. My goodness. All right, Everett, with that, on that note, I think it's a perfect place for us to end. We're at the end of our hour, our very social hour. It has been very social this week. Thanks to everybody for watching, for listening, for following along, for giving us good feedback in chat, or even if you were just silently watching the live feed, that's cool too. Remember, we are on at a new time. If you want to watch live, it's Fridays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Atlantic time, and lots of other different times around the world. You guys can email us with the times of where you're watching when you're watching live, if you like. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. Remember, that's where you can find all of our show episodes, subscription links, and more. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes as well. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.